Dave, I got to tell you, although there was probably no real doubt out there, in case there was, I've still got it. I am the baby whisperer once and for all time. I have my brother-in-law and his wife brought over their six-month-old son. And even though he's teething and around a lot of strange-looking people, and I do mean that ever since the word, I was once again the baby whisperer. Took this kid, settled him right down, walked around with him, had him smiling, had him giggling, which at that age, that's really kind of pre-giggles. You know, they're just starting to get their sense of humor at that point. Like object permanence hasn't really set in, so peekaboo is not in your repertoire. You've got to be a special kind of delightful to entertain a six-month baby. And I am every bit the delight I always have been. My title as baby whisperer is unchallenged.
So for everyone out there, if you don't have object permanence as a skill set in your brain, and you might not have facial recognition, then Brad Geiger is the friend for you, because that face apparently appeals perfectly to face blindness and to object as permanence. And boy, that's the guy for you. That's the guy you want to hang out with, is Brad Geiger.
You couldn't be more right. Number one, this is a face you don't want to remember. And number two, if I leave, you're kind of hoping I don't come back. So the peek part is okay. It's the boo that always upsets people.
That's fun. I'm happy to hear that you are a baby whisperer, that you're good with babies. That makes me happy. Because you are now, what is it, 16 years since you were last holding one of your own as a baby, right?
It's about 15 is more like it. But yeah, same difference.
Gotcha. Yeah, I am the exact opposite, in the sense that I will tell on myself. I'm a great dad. My kids are happy. They're wonderful. They're delightful. They got great senses of humor. And I was good when they were babies. But here's the thing. I do not enjoy... People are like, Dave, you want to hold the baby? And I'm like, nope. Happy to stand over here. I did my time as a dad for 3-4 years, whatever it was, holding babies. Yep. I don't want to hold your baby. I don't know what that is, where everyone's like, here, hold my... I mean, I know what it is because I remember that stage. You're like, I just want freedom for a minute. Please hold my baby.
I just want my arms back for a little while.
But I don't... It's interesting that I... Everyone has a stage as a parent that they excel at. And I was perfectly fine as a parent of little ones, but I didn't. I really enjoyed it when they can start walking and talking, and they start getting verbal jokes. That to me is when the magic starts to happen. That's when all the fireworks go off, when conversation can start. You know, that kind of thing.
That's exactly what I was gonna. That's what I was guessing when you said pre-show that you weren't so great with babies. I'm like, yeah, but I bet you as soon as they begin to talk, you become. You charge way ahead of me in that regard, because not only are you obviously very fast on your feet and delightful in your own way, but you can do voices better than I can.
Oh, there was a 5-year window where I'm gold as a dad, where now no one wants to hear my voices, but there was a 5-year window where, in fact, Gloria had the funniest joke one time because we were doing some bit, she and I, in the room, and our kids were like, all right, mom and dad, all right. And Gloria goes, you don't realize people pay us a lot of money to make these jokes. You're getting them for free.
You're getting free of charge.
Which I thought was such a funny response in the moment, because it was so honest from her. She's like, you don't realize people are lining up to work with us right now.
you better appreciate this.
And on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics, I'm baby whisperer Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave! Let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. We have a gigantic show for everybody today, focusing mainly on comic cons and conventions. But before we jump into any on that, we got to give a huge shout out and a thank you to our sponsors, Wacom, over at WACOM.com. the makers of the new Wacom One, and of course the full Cintiq line and the Intuos line. But Bradley, it has been a joy to have them as sponsors of the show, because it really is a match made in heaven for what we do on a day-to-day basis and the products that they make on a day-to-day basis. It's like a foot and a shoe finally getting together and meeting on Tinder is really what it is. I don't know where that metaphor came from. That doesn't work on any level. A foot and a shoe meeting on Tinder? Well, who's swiping? Who's swiping?
You must have a I have no idea where you're going with that one, but I will tell you this, that at that same meeting where my brother-in-law and his family came in, we were making plans to meet together in the Poconos Mountains later on for like a family get together. And I have never been so happy for the Wacom One, because his wife wants to bring all these board games. Do you play this? Do you play that? And I silently sat there and smiled and nodded. And of course, that sounds delightful. Meanwhile, making sure to make sure that when I leave for the mountains to pack my Wacom One, so I can take it with me, so I can find a corner somewhere in that cabin, and while they play their board games, I can delightfully sit there and work on my Wacom One.
Can I tell you where the one trip we're taking this year in the world of COVID is, we're going up to the mountains at the end of summer. Yeah. We're going to go up to Big Bear, which is a mountainy kind of place in California. And I'm taking my Wacom One. I'm super excited to draw, because you had such a lovely image with your Wacom that you photographed it and sent it to me. And I was like, that jerk. You were like out on a porch having a morning coffee. Like there was a deer walking by, like, good morning, sir. And you're like just out here drawing with my Wacom One as a white-tailed deer walks by.
Yeah, it was idyllic is the only word I can come up for it. And I wouldn't have been able to experience that without the Wacom One. So that's why we're so happy to have them as supporters, as sponsors of the Comic Lab podcast.
Now, Bradley, having said all of that, let us jump into the big topic of the day, because I know you were coming at this like an 800-pound gorilla charging out of the forest, because like three different people in your life have come up to you and been like, hey, I'm doing my first show. Brad, despite all the advice that you've been giving me, I'm ready to go do my first Comic-Con. And it is, speaking of parenting, it's like you in dad mode has come out like, no, hold on, let's talk about this. Are you sure you want to do this? Are you ready? You're in love, but are you ready for this? Hold on.
And that's actually a theme we're going to hit a couple of times during the next hour. But I kept seeing people get in. Like, hey, I've been trying to get into this show for years. This year is for the first time I'm getting in, and I'm kind of thinking, but think about why that might be.
Why would you be getting in?
There might be a little dot connecting to do here, but I saw it over and over again within a very short period of time. And so I started, I was giving this advice so much that I wrote it down because it was like all the stuff was just piling back up. So what we're going to do first is this is going to be the show where we give advice specifically to the first time comic convention exhibitor. Right. And that advice is going to be don't. We're going to talk about why you should not be doing a convention at all. And it definitely not this year, and possibly not in the years to come. Now, I want, if that's disappointing to you, if that's not what you want to hear, if that's angering to you in any way, first of all, listen to what we're saying here in the first half, because there's a lot of things that what happened was, Dave, I talked to this person on the phone who was in this situation, and I kept saying stuff like, well, have you thought about this? And she'd say no. And I'd say, well, what about this? She'd say no. What happened was there were so many costs in doing a comic convention that she was unaware of. That I'm like, okay, the first thing we need to do is really talk about all the costs that you're not expecting, probably, and maybe underestimating. And then we're going to go in and try to give some practical advice, because as we're going to hear later on in the show, Dave still does comic conventions, and for a very good reason. So we're going to talk about all of that. So if it starts to get a little heavy in the first part, hang in there. We're going to bring this all around by the end, okay? So first, The first thing I want to talk about is this, and it's something I keep hearing time and time again, and it's driving me crazy. And I want you to know, if you hear yourself saying this beyond the shadow of a doubt, you're making a horrible mistake. Okay. And this is what that sounds like. You're saying a sentence that sounds like this: I just got accepted into the XYZ convention. Now, what should I make to sell at my table?
My chest immediately tightened when you said that.
If that's you, if you've said that, now what do I've just got accepted. What am I going to print? What am I going to make with my Cricut machine? You know, a lot of these folks are doing handmade t-shirts and all this other stuff. Doing a print on demand print run, for example.
Can I tell you what that a little bit sounds like when you said, I've just been accepted to a show. Now, what do I make to sell the show? This is a little bit what it sounds like to me. I've just accepted a marriage proposal. Now, how do I fall in love real quick?
Yes, it's very much putting the cart in front of the horse.
It's a little backwards is the thing. Yeah, so keep going.
So, and you've heard this part on the show many times over, but my standing advice to people who want to exhibit at conventions is that they should hold off until they have a storage space full of proven merchandise that they need to sell, and that they can mitigate costs well enough to turn a profit after deducting all of their expenses. If your plan is to start producing merchandise now that you've been accepted into a convention, you're making a common, albeit expensive, mistake, and that's because of two factors. Number one, low unit profit. All right. If this is now I've got to make something, you're probably using print on demand, or you're assembling this merchandise by hand, or you've got something that you can print quickly with a low expense. Like maybe, I'm going to guess, enamel pins might fall into this category.
Right.
The problem is that there's not a huge profit margin on any of those things. You're not going to make that enough money selling just pins, for example, to make this weekend worth your while. Okay.
Right.
Your profit margin is low in all of these things. And here's the thing I really want you to think about: you've got unproven merchandise, right? Unless this book was kickstarted, or unless there was some kind of way that you know this thing is going to sell, if you're making a bunch of prints to sell at the convention, it's unproven merchandise.
Right. So just to underline this, because I'll be talking about this, about why I do shows in the sort of second half, but I'll give you a little precursors beforehand, which is I have high margin, high price items that I sell at Comic-Con, and that makes a big difference. If I can move even 10 books at $50 a unit, or 10 original arts at $100 to $200 a pop, that makes a huge difference towards defraying my costs and ultimately moving me into the black and profit for a show versus someone who only has ash cans that were produced for $2 and that they're selling for $5, or prints that were made for $3 and they're selling them for $10. The margins are not there, and the unit costs, because it's a low print run, as Brad was saying, you're only producing 50 or 25 or 100 versus a print run of 1,000, where your print costs become almost negligible. Then you're just fighting an uphill battle right off the start. So keep going, Brad. I'm just throwing in a little color for as you go here.
Yeah. And also, just to underline, when Dave sells a book, if that was a book that was Kickstarter funded, then he has got 100% profit on that book.
Yes.
Right. He doesn't have to subtract what he spent to have that book printed. That's already been covered. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you've got a 100% profit margin on that item, and it's proven because people have already shown the willingness to back it up.
It's proven not only online, but it's proven in the sense that, Brad, I now am good enough at shows that I only bring what sells good at shows.
Right.
So I don't necessarily bring my whole menagerie of products. I only bring the 40 to 60% that sell really well physically in person at a show. And that comes from many years of learning and, you know, sort of dipping a toe with this product, that product in a physical con space and learning. And so now I have it kind of down to a science. But it can be really hard when you go in with all or with some untested product going, this is what's going to make me my money.
Yeah.
And you've sunk a few hundred bucks into that print run.
Oh my
short
God.
Run, print run, small margins. So yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Keep going, Brad. Keep going. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So now here's where we're going to get into the second part of what we're going to talk about. And this is comic convention costs. And most of these things, your first time exhibitor hasn't even thought of, hasn't even really considered, right? They know that they've got to pay for their table or their booth. All right. And they're going to have to pay a couple hundred dollars in producing unproven merchandise, unless they've got a storage closet full of this stuff that they're just going to haul out and ship. Right.
Right.
But right. So right off the bat, you've already put down a few hundred bucks in your table and whatever you're going to sell at the table. But if you're going to do that, you got to print some flyers to hand out. Right? You're not going to have somebody come up to your table and think about, well, maybe I'm going to buy this thing and then walk away. No, you got to give them a flyer so they can find their way back. You got to have a map of the convention show floor showing them how to get back to your area on that flyer. You want to have the flyer with your comic or whatever it is you're doing online to at least take advantage of the fact that this person thought enough about what they saw in the moment to stop. So you got to have flyers to hand out. It's kind of worthless to be there without flyers. And if you're going to be there selling merchandise and handing out flyers, if you don't print up a banner stand and some table signage, you're going to be invisible in that casino-like atmosphere. Right, Dave? They might as well, so far, unless you've gone this far, you might as well not be there.
Yeah, I mean, without flyers, you're both losing people that might not be able to trace their way back to your table, and you're also losing out on the possibility for online promotion via a physical presence, which admittedly is a small number of people, but that flyer can drive them to evil-comic.com or drivecomic.com or whatever, you know, whatever it is. So you're losing out on that. And then also, like to Brad's point, you do have to drop a little bit of money on signage, or else you look like the one person that came to a garage sale and everyone else came to a convention and a floor show, you know, that kind of thing. And so you stand out in all the wrong ways without signage, right? So that is a given expense. And even if you just do the standard little pop-up set, usually you're looking at $150, $200 for just the basic set that, you know, that comes with a stand. So that gets expensive. And I will even argue, Brad, you said earlier you've already dropped a couple $100 on tables. Depending on the show, even if it's an artist alley, you can drop closer to 1,000 if you're not careful. So it's not just a couple hundred.
Very much so.
So keep going, because you're firing on all pistons. Keep going.
So now you've got all this stuff. You've got your signage. You're standing there, with your merchandise and your flyers. Somebody comes up. They actually want to buy something, but they don't carry cash. And if they do, it's at a premium, because the ATM is going to charge them, you know, $5 per transaction. Mm-hmm. So they've only got the cash on hand. They might want to buy a hot dog later, so they're going to need a couple of those 20s to rub together. You've got to be able to take digital transactions. You got to be able to do a credit card transaction on your phone. That means a Square reader or the equivalent, and it means one that's set up to take the chip-enabled cards. Now, I got to be honest with you. I noped out of comic conventions in 2017. I've been banging this drum for that long.
Right.
I don't know where we stand with the chip-enabled Square readers. I know they were sending out the swiper ones for free when you'd sign up. But then when they came out with the chip-enabled ones, last I checked in, you had to buy those. Do you know anything about this that I don't?
Yeah, I can chime in on that, because for the swiper version, which is a little dongle that plugs into your phone, that one is, you can just tell it's like 15 cents worth of electronics. They send that out for free or when you open an account. But the chip reader, which obviously has a more intensive reader process, because it also sends a code, verifies it, sends it back to the chip reader saying this card is legit. That costs you money. And I think it's on the order of like $30 to buy that thing. I haven't gone to a convention in 2 years because of COVID.
Right.
So I forget. Anyway, what that does, though, is that it reduces the fraud possibilities. So you pay less of a fee So there, it sort of pays for itself within a couple of transactions if you have sizable transactions. So, but again, just another fee to point out, if you are accepting cards versus cash, which you absolutely should, because most people will spend more money and more readily if they're using a card, you're going to be paying a credit card and possibly also a bank processing fee, depending on who you're doing your card with. And so that's 3-4% depending on what kind of transaction it is. So just kind of, again, with that $3 ash can that you produce that you're selling for $5, you also got to take out the 3-4% of her credit card processing fees. So just keep that in mind. So keep going, Brad. You're steamrolling. You're on,
and,
you're on
and
a roll.
Before you get angry at that, that deal that Square offers you is still head and shoulders above the deal that we used to have for credit card processing. Oh. So don't even waste your time getting mad at Square. They're handing you the best deal that independent artists have ever had.
Really co-sign. Really, really co-sign. Don't do the one with your bank that they're going to try to hook you in on. Do Square. Square is, there's a reason why Square it took off as fast as it did, and it's because it's easy to use. It has great inventory tracking at a show, and it also has great rates. So yeah, absolutely co-signed on that.
So now you're sitting there with your merchandise and your credit card reader, and if you're set up to do all this, are you prepared to purchase Wi-Fi? Just in case, I'm now speaking in italics, Dave, just in case that convention center, somehow mysteriously, you don't get a Wi-Fi signal in there all
of a
sudden.
Which it will. They all do it.
But don't worry. If you mysteriously can't get a Wi-Fi signal inside the convention center, guess what? They'll sell you access to a Wi-Fi convention.
How nice.
Oh my God, I can't even finish that sentence.
No, I know what you're, everyone knows what you're saying. Here's the thing though. In fairness to a lot of these shows, you're also stuck in one of the most heavily metal reinforced concrete buildings that humans can build, right? Because it's a freestanding roof, so you got to have a lot of steel and a lot of concrete around you. It blocks a lot of local cellular signals. Then you throw in 40,000 people in a small square footage. Whatever the local cell tower is doing its best. It's like my belt in winter. Yeah. It's like, I'm doing my best here, champ. I'm trying to keep it together. And so that cell tower is trying to process 40,000 phones all at the same time, and it can't do it, so you're losing your signal. So of course you've got to pay for Wi-Fi for the show, and they know that. Right. And then that Wi-Fi line is something, it's always something ridiculous, like $50 to $150 per day. And you're like, oh, all right, I guess I'm paying this.
It's exorbitant. And then if you're going to do all of that, do you have external phone batteries for your phone? Because you're going to be on the show floor.
That's you're asking me. Yeah.
Dave, I had you right there in the palm of my hand. Do you have external phone batteries for your phone? Because you're going to be on that show floor from morning until evening. If it's an anime convention, you're going to be there all night, right?
Right. So you're either buying a $30 external battery on Amazon for your phone, or you're paying $30 to $50 to have a power line dropped, maybe sometimes more than that, I forget, to your booth that you can plug your phone in. And so either one of those. San Diego Comic-Con is kind of the creme de la creme of kind of semi-free stuff. They include the carpeting. They include the power line. They include the tables, all that sort of stuff. If you're going to a Reed Pop show, they're going to be like, all right, that air you're breathing, that's our air. That's going to be $100. That Wi-Fi, that's $100. You want a chair? Oh, fancy pants. That's $200. Oh, you think I'm joking? There are some Reed shows where you're like, you're paying for everything. And you're like, good God, thanks for the handouts here.
Yeah, well, actually, that's next on my list, Dave. Is this a show by Reed Expo? Unless you have an artist alley spot, which I think comes with a table and chairs, if you're paying the big money for a booth or for small press, you'll probably have to bring your own tables and chairs or rent them at the show. And if you're an old person like Dave and I, if you've been listening to Webcomic Weekly back in the day, do you remember the show, Dave, where I think it was the first ever New York Comic Con? I showed up and I had a booth that I had bought at New York Comic Con. And I showed up and all there was a concrete floor and masking tape. And I said, hey, you guys forgot. I bought a whole booth. I need a table and two chairs. They go, you can rent one. And I said, rent one? I bought a booth. Where's my... I called in. We did a live show for Webcomics Weekly with me spitting and sputtering like a wet hen because I was infuriated. I took a look at what they were going to charge me to rent a table and chairs, and I left in Manhattan. I went out and found a Home Depot and bought them. because it was cheaper, even yeah. with all the logistics, and then hauled it back by hand back to the convention center.
I know more than a few people that have gone to a Costco or gone to a Home Depot and bought all the supplies rather than rent from Reed, because Reed was like five times cost of what it would be to just buy a table and then give it to someone at the show. Be like, hey, you want an extra table? Take it home with you. Fine. Yours to.
That's absolutely right.
And so, yes, absolutely a fee. And then also not to to jump on your parade, but New York also has the wonderful, New York Comic Con has the wonderful thing of, like, in Dave Kellett's case, you've hauled these books all the way across the country. You've hauled them from your hotel to the convention floor. And then you cross that the doors of that convention hall and someone goes, oh, whoa, sir, you can't lift that heavy box here. Let us take that for you. That'll be $100 to carry that to your booth. And I go, no, I'm fine. No, no, sir, you don't understand. We're going to carry that to your booth. That's $100. And you're like, oh, geez, Louise.
Gosh darn it. What next? So now you've got all your stuff at your table. You're setting everything up. You've bought or rented your table and chairs. You've got your flyers all in the stack. And this really nice person in a business suit stops at your table and says, excuse me, can I see your sales tax license? Mm-hmm. And then you had better either show your sales tax license, or in some cases, they will shut you down on the spot. And this was happening. They were going table to table to table. The local, the state departments of revenue were stopping table to table, checking state licenses. And this was pre-COVID. We're post-COVID now, and those state governments are very hungry for tax money. There is no reason to believe that this is all of a sudden going to be abated at your next convention. So you're either going to face getting shut down on the spot or having to sign up on the spot. Either way, you're going to have a bunch of red tape to deal with and a check to write when you get home.
A great example of that one is Emerald City Comic Con. The state of Washington physically walks around and they go, hi, do you have a state of Washington reseller's license? And I do. And so I go, yep, here's my thing. But I've seen them at the adjoining tables go, do you have one? And the cartoonist instantly flops footing going, no, I didn't get a reseller's license. And the state of Washington wisely goes, here's your form. I'll wait right here for while you fill it out, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then you could, if you wanted to risk the danger of it, be like, the state of Washington can pry that cash out of my cold, dead hands. But the problem there is that, so you fly home to your state, and then if you ever want to exhibit in Washington again, you're in a little bit of trouble because you didn't pay the tax from the last time you were there. So I know some cartoonists who have had that trouble, and you want to be honest and legit and above board with whatever state you're exhibiting in. Except for Montana. They know what they did to me. No, I'm just kidding.
I did one show in New Jersey at the very beginning, I think, of Greystone Inn. I did a show in New Jersey and I had to register for sales tax. And then for some, I kept getting notifications every quarter. You need to fill out the paperwork. Yeah. Well, I didn't do a show. I would have to fill out paperwork saying that I did $0.00 quarter after quarter for years until I finally got disgusted and said, I'm never going to do another show in New Jersey. Who am I kidding? And because I had to keep it because maybe I'll do a show in New Jersey. Right. And then I'd get these things quarter after quarter until finally I'm like, screw it. If I ever want to do it again, I'll just re-sign up. And I had to go through all of the, you go to a state website, which of course, you know, is very well designed and gives very clear instructions, and spent the next 2 hours canceling my sales tax license for New Jersey.
Yeah. So all of this is to say is there are more considerations from the post income, like from your getting your gross down to your net. There's a couple of considerations that you really have to take into account. A lot of these are these sort of hidden expenses at a show, hidden state expenses in terms of sales tax that you probably forgot to collect. So now you've got to take it out of your gross. And then all the little tiny fees that you don't think about, like, well, I guess I need book stands. All right. Well, that was $5. I guess I need some paper clips. So that's $3. I guess all the little things that you don't think about that you're going to need that you pay for as you go to the show. And then the food costs in and around a convention. Food is generally 30 to 40% higher than it is anywhere else. And you're on the road. So that's expensive. And then there's the keep going, Brad.
Well, the food, let's not get too far ahead, but the food, I will say about this, If you're one of these people who wants to network and stuff, you better be prepared to pick up a couple tabs or at least buy a couple beers, right? So yeah. Put that into your food budget as well. Now let's rewind a little bit, because let's say you're not even at the convention yet. You got to get that stuff to the convention. And even just selling books and relying on media mail, you're still going to have to ship all that stuff to the convention. Your best bet is to ship to the hotel, but call ahead. Some hotels charge for this service. I've done Chicago a few times now. Every different hotel I've stayed in at Chicago charged me to accept the packages that I sent to the hotel. In one case, I stood there at the front desk, I looked at the lady, and I said, "What did you give my books a private room? It was that expensive just to accept the books I shipped to the hotel."
You did that Mel Brooks joke where someone hands him the bill at the end of the restaurant. And have you ever heard this Mel Brooks joke where he goes, "They're charging for butter?" here's the thing. I will mail ahead. I will obviously bring some in my luggage, but I will mail ahead books via USPS to my hotel when I go to Emerald City Comic Con. Sometimes I will mail them ahead to cousins. I have a funny story about that, but I will mail them ahead most commonly to my hotel. That's using media mail, which is by far the cheapest shipping route you can use in the continental US. It's $15 to send a 30-pound box of books, right? So it's got about 20 to 30 books in there. It costs me $15. You can do the unit cost in your head of what that is. Then it gets to the hotel, and their storage fee for that box is about $25 per box. Sometimes it's $15, sometimes it's 10, but in Washington, in Seattle, which is an expensive city, they're like, "We got you for $25. So then I have to pay that. And then I've got to bring them up to my room until I go to the show the next day. I got to haul them across the street to all of that is a hassle. It is a tremendous hassle. Yes. And it's also expensive. So Brad's point is spot on, which is you don't think about those until you start tallying up your show at the end. And you're like, "Oh boy, I had to pay $150-$200 in shipping costs to get all this stuff up to Seattle." Yeah. That is not nothing. That adds up, you know? And so it's something you have to keep in mind.
And if you're one of these folks that are saying, "Well, that's okay, I'm just going to put it in my carry-on bags, or I'm just going to take it on the plane," I'll put it. Number one, if you put it in your checked luggage, double check to make sure that your airline hasn't unveiled new charges for checked luggage. Back in the day, you could check luggage for free, right? That at the worst, maybe you tip the red cap. Now you got to pay for checked luggage.
Well, and not only that, if you at all want to support the things that you're shipping in checked luggage, you most commonly have to use a physical bag, not a collapsible bag. And here's the problem with that. You're also paying for that same damn bag to go back to your home city empty at the end of the show. If you can figure out a way to collapse one bag into another bag and still have it support books, go with God, because you figured out a trick that I in 20 years have not figured out. So you're basically paying double fee.
And if you're putting the stuff on your carry-on luggage, let's face it. Let's be honest with each other just for a minute. If you are able to put this into your carry-on luggage that you can put in the overhead compartment, you're not bringing enough merchandise that even if you sell every last one of them, that you're going to make a profit that's going to make this weekend worthwhile to you.
Oh my God, yes. For me to make a profit at Emerald City Comic Con, I have to ship 10 boxes of books. Yes. That's not a small amount of books, right?
Yes.
And I have to ship all that. And it's a pain in the ass because I also have to do this, Brad. Something Beth and I learned a long time ago, or maybe it was before Beth started working for me. I learned that you have to distribute the types of books across every type of box, because if you ship all your boxes siloed, then if you lose box 8, then you're completely out of all the books that are in box 8, obviously, for the show, right? So you have to mix and max all the different books in the different boxes so that you are assured to have your entire line at the show. It's so annoying, but it's one of those small things that you learn to do going to conventions. If you, like me, have a larger series of books, you don't want to be out of book 3 if you have 1 through 8. And then people are like, "Oh, I'd love to get the whole series. Where's 3? And you're like, "They lost it on the route to the show," you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And although I've seldom been in the situation where I sold out a book, I've been in this next situation, the insult to injury. You go to a show and you don't sell any of them, or you don't sell as many of them as you hoped you would. Now, at the end of the show, you got to pay to ship those things that you couldn't sell back to your house. Now you're spending even more money on stuff that you couldn't sell in the first place.
Oh, that has only happened to me once about a decade ago. And here's why it's so painful. You fly home, you land, you shower, you go to sleep, you wake up, you do a day's work, you do a second day's work. Then the books arrive and you're like, God bless America. They're here again.
They're just there to remind you. You just get over your sense of being a big failure. And then there they are on your doorstep reminding you, guess what? You're still a failure.
Yeah. By the way, I want you to know, Brad, as a separate side note, that this is how I knew we were going to be fired up for the show, because not only did I make a gigantic latte for the show, I made a second gigantic latte for the show.
Whoa.
So we're looking at like 32, 40 ounces of latte for this show. So by the end of this podcast, Dave Kellett will be sweating bullets and spitting fire. That's what's going to be happening.
and we're just getting near the end of the expenses that you probably weren't fully prepared for. So and these will go relatively quickly because A, we haven't talked about hotel rooms yet.
Nope.
Right. And even if you're staying with friends, you're cramming a whole bunch of people into that hotel room. A, it's still going to be expensive. And B, if you're cramming that many people into the room, you're going to be miserable sleeping on the floor. I know, because I've done it. Let's talk about travel. Unless you can easily drive to and from the convention, you've got to factor in travel expenses. And if you're flying, listen to this, Dave. If you're flying, this thing is going to happen. Vroom. That's your pathway to profit. It just taxied down the runway. Bye-bye. There it is. That's my sound effects. Listen, if you were 6 months old, you would have enjoyed that.
Well, and listen, there's also something that you haven't factored in, which is all the small, not expenses, but losses, right?
Yeah.
A lost $5 bill here, a lost $10 bill here, a misapplied price for this or that, right? All the little mistakes that you might make in a busy moment in shows. And then the most expensive mistake I have ever heard somebody make during a show where they had a kind of a bank holiday, so the banks were closed.
Yeah.
I won't name the name of the cartoonist. They had all their cash in a hotel room safe in their room.
Yeah.
Brad knows who I'm talking about. They flew home, and as the plane is on the runway, they remembered that they had left the $8,000 in cash in the safe at the hotel. They call. I think they even flew back, didn't they? I don't remember the story.
I think they called from the air. It was back before cell phones were as prevalent. So they had to use one of those cell phones that you had to slide your credit card through that was attached to the seat in front of you.
And they called, and this is what happened. Sir, we checked the room and nothing was there. It was $8,000 in cash because someone's like, I can get a job at another hotel. See you later. I'm taking this. Yep. All right.
$8,000. I'm outsie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that cartoonist, the entire weekend's worth of profit was gone. By one mistake. And there's little mistakes that you can make along the way. You didn't package your books well enough, so they explode in transit. Someone spilled a drink at your booth, and that can ruin a couple $100 worth of prints or posters. Or, God, how many kids, Brad, put their drink right on top of your prints as they come up to your table? Not even kids, sometimes adults.
Prints. I'd kiss their feet if they came up and put their sweaty drink on a print. They came up and put it on my original art, and I just about murdered one of them.
Yeah. So, and those kind of accidents and mistakes can cost anywhere from $5, $10 to hundreds, and then occasionally a few $1,000 at a McCon. And sometimes you have to price that in as the cost of doing business, is that I always have a few prints that I have to throw away at the end of the show because some kid with ketchup fingers came up and was like, oh, look at all the comics, you know, and you're like, geez Louise, mom and dad, pay attention.
Come on. Jump in here, mom or dad.
Exactly.
Well, the last item on my list to wrap up this part of the conversation is just this. You've probably spent a good chunk of the week leading up, if not the weeks leading up to the show, prepping for the show, right?
Yes.
Now you're at the show week. You've spent that whole week or a good chunk of that weekend on either side of it doing the show, traveling to it, doing the show, traveling back. And then afterwards, you're recovering, right? You've heard exhibitors talk about con crud. I can only imagine the cases of con COVID that we're going to look forward to, right? One way or the other, you're probably going to pick a little something up and have a little case of the sniffles to deal with when you're back. And if not, you're just going to be exhausted from being on your feet all that time.
Yeah, I mean, I lucked out, and for whatever reason, maybe it's just I use enough sanitizer and wash my hands enough, where I don't tend to get con crud. It's about 20% of the time do I come back with like, oh boy, I feel terrible. There are some cartoonists for whom their immune system is not great, and they're down for the count consistently for three or 4 days after every show. But I will say this, even myself, who lucked out immune system-wise, I'm still exhausted for 2 days after San Diego Comic-Con. Like, I think Beth and I just take the day off that Monday. We like don't even try because we're just physically exhausted from that show. Because you're on your feet for 5 days and you're also on. You're physically like, I'm presenting. I'm ready to be social. You know, and you're talking consistently for 10, 12 hours. So it's exhausting. It's physically exhausting. So, yes, there is a cost to be paid both in lost time preparing and lost time recovering. And then obviously the lost time of the show. So all that being said, I personally find it incredibly invigorating to be there. And we'll talk about that in the second half.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics.
So, Dave, that's actually a really good topic for us to get into next. Why do you still do conventions? How can you clear this? How can you, in good conscience, still do a good convention?
Because I'm a glutton for punishment. why do I still do shows? This is a great, this is a whole flip side argument to Brad's. Yeah. Really, really good points warning you off of why maybe you shouldn't do a show until it's a few years have passed. You've built up a body of physical merch that you have. You have tested that product already on online sales. Your audience is big enough that you could drive them to the show and not vice versa. Brad has made excellent points, all of that. So I'm going to do flip side arguments of why I, Dave Kellett, still do shows in a world where Brad Geiger has decided wisely not to. And the specific reasons why I still do it, because I think it will be helpful to hear the reasons, because if these don't apply to you, really take that to heart of like, well, wait a minute. Dave does this because he has these margins or he has these costs or he has this booth location and all this sort of stuff. And that is different than what I would have. And so maybe I should rethink why I'm doing or wanting to do this show. So let's talk about this. I have done, let's say, 30 different shows across North America. In the U.S. and in Canada. I've never done a show in Mexico, but in the U.S. and Canada, I've done probably 25 shows in the U.S., maybe 5 shows in Canada. I had a great time at most all of them. I love them, like meeting people genuinely. I really, as much as I am an introvert, when I get to a show, the extroverted side of me comes out, and I love the interaction with readers, with other cartoonists. I genuinely love it. But many of you who follow me closely know that I only do 3 shows now. I do San Diego Comic-Con. I do Emerald City Comic Con begrudgingly, as you guys might know from recent years. And then I do Anaheim Comic Con, which is sometimes called WonderCon. And I do that one mainly for reasons of localness and locality and just good enough profit wise where I'm like, it's all right. It's on the bubble. So really, the only one that I definitely do and will always do is San Diego Comic Con. So let's start with that. Now, for all 3 shows, after 20 years of exhibiting at these shows, I have an amazing booth location.
Yes.
San Diego Comic-Con. Now, listen, I'm not taking that. I don't want you to take that as an excuse for like when a show doesn't go well, you can be like, well, I had a terrible booth location. That might be the case. But more often than not, it's that the show itself was never going to make you money. Right. Don't necessarily blame booth location for a bad show. But I have to say that it does make a difference, both in terms of your mood, your visibility, and your sales when you have a really good booth location, right? So for most shows, you're going to have an average booth, and that's fine. For San Diego Comic-Con, go ahead, Brad, jump in.
There was one time that booth location absolutely killed me. And it was the time that I was exhibiting, and I'm not making this up, across the aisle from Playboy models. And I had longtime fans, people that have been following me for years, walk up and down that aisle and never saw me because their head was always turned exactly the other opposite direction. That was one time that location definitely deep sixed me.
that's funny. I've never run into that. You and I, Brad, had a booth in San Diego Comic-Con, or maybe it was Chris Straub and I. Yeah. It was right next to the Watchmen booth from DC and Warner Brothers. And they kept playing that trailer, which was a great trailer.
Yeah.
But they blared it on repeat for 5 days in a row. And Chris Straub and I wanted to kill ourselves at the end. We're like, this is the worst. I hate this trailer. I don't want to see this Watchmen movie now. And I was actively excited to see it. So yes, placement in a show can be ruinous to your health if you're in a bad location. Yes. Anyway, so for all three shows that I do, San Diego Comic-Con, I have an amazingly choice corner booth. Emerald City Comic-Con, I have quite literally one of the best booths you can have in comics on the Sky Bridge of the Seattle show. And I love that location. It's fantastic. Anaheim, I'm in literally the front row as you walk in the door. I cannot be missed. So all three, I have amazing locations. So second thing that I have that you might not have with a show, I have 20 years of merch, most of which, 99% of which, is long since paid off in production costs, either from the line selling out on the store or because it was kickstarted in the first place, all that sort of stuff. So I also have an established and proven online audience that I can direct to me at the show rather than hoping that they will be at the show and find me. That also makes a difference. I have in general minimized my travel and stay costs after years of trial and error, and especially with San Diego, which is inarguably one of the two most expensive shows to exhibit at. I have family in San Diego. I'm from San Diego. And I can drive down all my supplies and me and my books in my Honda Odyssey down to San Diego, zero cost there aside from the $40 in gas. That's an amazing savings from most everyone else in North America who has to fly in merch, fly themselves in, get a $500 a night hotel in San Diego, whatever it is, something ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, and then when I'm at shows, most people say, I want to go to network. Well, my networking at a show is less about, hey, who can I get to hire me? And more about who can I hire to create drive stories? That's a very different kind of networking. And it's less pressure dependent, less like I need a job and more of like, hey, I'm looking for to hire new and interesting artists that I find. Right. I also have 20 years of convention supplies paid off. I know that doesn't sound like much, but if it's $5 here, $20 here, $100 here for this table, $150 for this banner display, all of that slowly being bought year after year after year. And all those costs are now amortized and long since paid off. And so that's an amazing thing that I don't have to pay for anymore. Third, I also kind of know exactly how much to bring now after 20 years of conventioning. That's not a big, a small consideration. As Brad says, there's nothing worse than having to ship stuff home and taking that extra cost. When you know exactly how much to ship and you're bringing back two books in your luggage, you're already checked in luggage. That is chef's kiss perfect. I almost have it down to that point with Emerald City Con. I know exactly how much to bring. And then some cartoonists go saying like, oh, I'm going to do a lot of nighttime networking. I'm going to stay up late. 2 a.m. drinking and having carousing with other cartoonists, and won't that be fun? Yes, it is. And there's inarguably that is so much fun when you're in your 20s. I think Carl Kershaw of Abominable Charles Christopher and Scott Kurtz of PvP taught me the far better way to do a convention as a dad and as an increasingly older gent is, those blackout curtains in a hotel room make the room real dark. You can fall asleep at 9 p.m., crank that AC up real high and noisy. There's no kids around. You can get a real good night's sleep, Brad. You can get a real good night's sleep.
Yes, you can.
And
yes,
so I can. I don't even do the late night networking that other people do. And then, as I mentioned before, I also have high margin items. This can't be understated. It is night and day difference, even between how Brad and I do the show. The fact that I have original art that can sell versus Evil Inc., which is all digital. Those originals, you sell 10 of them at $100 a pop, that makes a big difference in your show.
Yes,
you sell 20 books at $50 a pop, that makes a big difference in your show versus trying to sell ash cans or pins or $5 prints. It's so much harder for those artists in Artist Alley that have low margin, low cost items. And so that makes a big difference. And then I'm also established as a corporation that can accept credit cards. All of that has worked out. There's no new fees, you know, in terms of like, I got to set all this up for the show. It's long since established. It's long since grandfathered in as a cost. So that's all the reasons why I do shows, right? And it's all, keep in mind, it's only at 3 shows. They're all on the West Coast. They're all comparatively low cost in terms of my travel and stay, aside from Emerald City Comic Con, which is why it's on the bubble for me. But here's what I do not do. I don't do shows in Canada anymore. And I don't do shows in other time zones, because if I do a show on the East Coast, super fun, going to New York, who doesn't love New York? Well, I don't, but who doesn't love going to New York? But the problem is, it's a wasted travel day when you've got to come back, either for Brad coming back from San Diego or me coming back from New York. There's a whole day of travel from another time zone. And it's not just another time zone, it's 3 time zones over. So it's, you know, it's a waste of a day. I don't do any of those shit branded shows, and forgive me for saying shit, but those wizard shows that do nothing, are terrible. It feels like you're just as likely to find a local plumber exhibiting there as you are comic convention people.
It feels like nothing. You are just as like, when you go down the show floor, and like I said before, and you find the person that's selling bathtub fittings, and you go around the corner and you've got somebody selling, you know, God knows what else. I've seen the armed forces set up booths there. I've seen people selling any number of things. Insurance I've seen being sold at some of these shows. And it's like, this is not making this show a better show for the attendees, you know, and certainly not for the exhibitors.
And as you get older and you get a little bit more insightful as a business person, you go, oh, this is a show that could not fill their floor. And so in desperation, they're like, huh, what else might be tangentially appealing to the youth? All right, how about Geico Insurance? Kids are first-time drivers. They might need insurance. They'll get a booth. And then they look around, they're like, huh, we still got 20 more booths to sell. All right, the bath fitting guy. That, who cares? Yep. At this point, now we're just trying to sell. And so you end up with a weird show that doesn't feel like a Comic-Con because it has all this ancillary stuff that is not comics. And so, or even broadly speaking, pop culture. So I don't do those crap LA or wizard shows, which are just admittedly terrible. And some of the Reed shows are in that same ballpark. I don't even do local shows that I could hop in my van and be at in 5 minutes in downtown LA, that are terrible. So I think, I don't know if it still exists anymore, but there was one called like Stan Lee's LA Comic Con. Terrible. I don't do it because even though my cost would be nothing, in fact, they'd probably give me the table for free. Now the return on investment is my time. Is it worth my time 3 days in downtown LA to make a smattering of dollars, even though I've spent nothing? You know what I mean, Brad? Like now the big expense is my time. And then I don't do shows where I can't sell the high margin items. There are certain kind of art shows, certain kind of book fair shows where I can't sell my high margin items. That makes a difference. And then the last consideration that I do is I got burned once about 20 years ago. I never do a show twice where I have lost money or didn't make a suitable amount of profit. And that's why I only do 3 shows now, because slowly but surely, in testing out different shows around the country, which I was wont to do, I would go, well, I didn't make 2 times my cost in profit, and so I'm never doing that show again. Because for me, it's not just am I $5 in the black. I've got to make at least 2 times and ideally 5 times cost at a show to make up for the lost time getting to the show, the lost time at the show, the lost time after the show, and all the things that I could have been doing in that time. So that's how I profited out with San Diego Comic-Con, with Anaheim, and then and on the bubble. It's definitely less of the 5 times cost show, Emerald City Comic-Con. Some years it's gangbusters, some years not so much. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, that's an important point about never losing money at a show twice, because sometimes people will ask me, what's a big mistake you made in doing comic conventions? And that's my answer, falling into the gambler's mentality. Yes. The biggest mistake I made personally was losing money at a show and then saying stuff like, well, it's because I had bad placement on the show floor, or it's because, there was this other thing. Sometimes they have these special deals where the exhibitor might pay $300, $400 for a VIP pass to do something special at the show. By the time they show up to my booth, they're $400 in the hole. They don't have any money left to spend on me. They've already spent it before they even walked in the door.
Right.
And I'd have that situation and I'd say, but next one's going to be better. Yeah. Next show I'm going to make up. And it took me a long time to realize that it just never happens. And then you make a little bit more at the next show, and then you lose it at the show after that. And then you make a little bit more, and you lose it at the show after that. And then you lose a couple in a row, and you're like, when's it going to hit? And you can really, really get into some bad habits because of gambler's mentality. So I'm glad to hear that you've got that standing rule. You never lose twice.
Yeah, well, your goal should always be to profit from a show. If that's not a goal, then that's a problem. If you're saying like, well, I lost $700, but I did some great networking, that's not a great excuse for a show. The better thing to have done would have been to just fly to the show and go walk around and network, right? If that's what your main goal was. It should at least be $5 in profit. And God willing, you should be five times cost to make a profit at a show. Because granted, Brad, I haven't done Comic-Con in 2 years now. 2019 was my last show, but I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I remember it vaguely. Anyway, it doesn't matter. What I was going to say is, when I was giving you those numbers for 2019 for what I made at San Diego Comic-Con, you should mentally be in your head going, okay, but Dave also spent $2,500 for that booth, right? For that sweet, sweet corner booth at Comic-Con. Dave also spent at least $300, if not more, for food at San Diego Comic-Con. Even though he didn't have to fly, he spent $80 down and back on gas, right? All those little costs.
Counts.
Right. It all still counts. So in your head, you should be doing like, well, Dave said he did gangbusters. I did do gangbusters, but there's still a lot of cost for somebody who is local and drove down to San Diego and had a place to stay right there. I still had a ton of costs for San Diego. So you have to take into account. So I guess what I'm saying there is, I'm warning you about the people that do the big talk of the show of like, I did gangbusters. There was no way that I maybe they did do gangbusters. Maybe they made $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $10,000 at the show. Did they? Are they, when they're talking to you as the big man on campus, are they sharing their flight costs, their hotel costs, their booth costs, their shipping costs, their food costs, all the ancillary costs that they have at the show? They're probably not. They're probably not even doing it in their head of what even their cost of goods sold for their items were that they made, because they just want to focus on the big gross number and not focus on their net. And so be wary of the shows, the folks that talk a big game that you can tell aren't doing the math in their head. Go ahead, Brad.
Oh, absolutely. And not only that, but and we talked a couple of weeks ago about not getting suckered in by the press release, right? Not to get fooled by marketing talk. And as social media is becoming more and more about publishing and promotion, more and more of what we hear on social media is marketing talk. So here's one to look out for. And it's perfectly, by the way, if you've made a post like this, I guarantee you I've made a post like this. But we need to look what's going on underneath. When you hear somebody make a post that says, I sold out of book number four. Book number four is a sellout. And I sold out every copy of the book. That's fantastic. The question you should be asking is, how many did you bring? How many books did you bring? Brought 10 books and it's a set, it's a sellout, but selling 10 books is not going to put you into the black on your profit. How many did you bring?
Right.
The first question you always ask when somebody says they sold out of their book, how many did you bring?
Now, yes, that's absolutely true. And another thing that I should talk about, though, because this is also a counterweight that's going on the back of my mind, is that I love going to Comic-Cons. I've talked about this before, that I'm an introvert. Mm-hmm. I would prefer to be in my studio away from people. But two or three times a year, I do genuinely love the energy that I get from Comic-Con. You've seen me, Brad, physically coming off of San Diego Comic-Con, where I should be exhausted. And I am physically exhausted. But mentally, I'm like awake beyond my days, because I've just had been infused with basically kind words for 5 days. And readers coming up and saying, I love this, I love that. How can that not power you for the rest of the year, right? But I will also say that I don't know what the replacement strategy is for younger cartoonists for conventions in this regard. Everyone that I work with professionally, yourself included, and all of my friends in cartooning, of which I was probably 20 or 30 that I could, you know, in terms of good casual friendships, who I've also done projects with, I met at shows. And I don't know what the replacement is if we're telling people, and I think it's wise, that maybe they should hold off on shows until they're a little bit more established. Because I did lose money at early shows, and there were a lot of shows that I would never return to, but I met people there. And wasn't that lovely that I met Chris Straub there, or David Malky there, or Jeff Jacks there, or Ryan North there, or Brad Geiger there, right?
I was waiting for that name to come up on the list.
Well, you know, it's low on the totem pole, but he gets there eventually. But what I'm getting at is, though, is that there is value in a show. There is networking value. Some of it is an intangible that you can't process, like, oh, that editor that I work with now, I met 10 years ago at a show, and it's been a slowly building a relationship. But I needed to have met them at a show. So I do find value in networking. Sometimes it is nebulous. Sometimes it's hard to track back to a show to say this was a worthwhile cost because 8 years from now it led to this project. But that does exist. It does happen. It is important. It's good for both the soul and for your business to meet other cartoonists and artists and editors and publishers and all that sort of stuff. It also, Brad, has been helpful for us in that there have been some publishers, and I think you'll be honest about this too, some publishers and editors that we did meet that we go, oh, we're never working with them because we've met them, and you can feel crazy coming off of them or something. Yeah. And you're like, nope, not working with them.
We're getting as far. And then when they would show up online with this thing or that thing, we'd be like, no, you remember that guy? We met him. He's nuts. We're not doing anything
we're
with
not,
that
nope,
guy.
We're not doing that project. So,
well, listen, you're absolutely right. But I think at some point we do need to bring this a little bit back to where we are right now, and that is in a post-COVID convention situation.
Amen. Because boy, does that change things. Yeah.
Yeah. Because as we know, many conventions are just starting to open up after closing down. And we know that we're not out of the woods yet because the Delta variant of the COVID virus is right now brewing, especially among unvaccinated people, right? And so we know that there is not a probability, but there's a decent possibility that we could be facing another COVID lockdown.
Well, listen, and even if the U.S. and Canada for North American shows, even if we do eventually get to herd immunity via vaccination in the next calendar year, the vast majority of the world will still be unvaccinated, which means we're going to get Delta, we're going to get Lambda, we're going to get Gamma. You know, there's going to be more variants. Yeah. It's not like that goes away. And I'm not an epidemiologist, but I'm saying, like, if it's in the wild through that many millions of people, you're going to get different variants. And so this is not going away anytime soon. We're going to be facing it for at least another 18 to 24 months. And so shows are going to be weird. They're going to be weird. And there's going to be a big percentage of the population, even who are vaccinated, inoculated, who are like, nope, I'm not doing a show. I'm not going around 100,000 people right now. No, I'll wait 2 years and then I'll go to a show again. That's going to affect your business, you know?
Yeah. And that's what was kind of bothering me, because I've heard so many people say that that's the reason we're doing this show. So many people I'd heard of directly saying, hey, I'm doing this big show for the first time. I've never been able to get in before, but I got in and this year and I'm really excited. And it's like, why do you think that is? Why do you think it was easier for you to get in this year? Because a lot of people are noping out of that too. They're like, nah, we're not doing it. I want you to ask, I mean, here's a few questions. Is your convention in the fall, in something we typically call the cold and flu season? Is your show in a densely populated city in the United States? And does your show have any contract language in regards to what happens to your money if the show is canceled due to COVID lockdown or COVID related situations? It is not impossible to see an awful lot of problems that could come up in regards to COVID, right?
Yeah. And like, let's completely take the public health side of things out of here in terms of, like, what's the circulation like in your convention hall? Does it have windows that it could open, which would make a huge difference towards the air quality of that gigantic room, right? Let's take all of that aside. just focus on the human psychology of it. It's going to be weird for a year or two. Even if we were all vaccinated today, which we're not because there's a bunch of idiots that are not getting vaccinated. And also well-minded people who can't for immunology reasons, but I get that part. But I'm saying there's a lot of idiots. But even if we could all get vaccinated today, it would still be psychologically weird to be in a room with 100,000 people. I would be weirded out by that. I don't know that I'm ready to do a show yet. Like San Diego Comic-Con has this pseudo one coming in November. I don't know that it is going to be a good show, both for the fact that it is cold and flu season and the Delta variant will be taking off at that point as people move indoors in Southern California, right? As it gets a little bit chillier outside. For California, that's like going from 72 to 71 degrees, by the way. But I don't know that that's a good idea. And I don't know that psychologically I'm ready to take both the return on investment, all the troubles that we have just described for a show, and then add in, oh, and potentially you could also be a vector for disease. Like, well, wait a minute. I don't know that I want to do this show now. You know what I mean? If I'm barely making a profit and all these expenses, and I don't know if I'm going to make it work for me profit-wise, and then you add in a vector of disease, and you're like, well, fuck this noise. I'm not doing this show. Why would I do this?
Now, at this point, Dave, I've got to show off a little bit, because as you know, I do have a mutant ability. I've got a special quirk I've been developing for some time, ESP.
Okay.
Did you know I had an ESP? I've got extrasensory podcasting. I can actually hear the people who are listening to this show 4 weeks later as they're talking back to their digital device, listening to the show. Did you know I could do that?
I did not.
Are you ready for this?
I'm super ready for this, yes.
And all of these things that they're saying start with, yeah, but. We got a lot of yeah, but. So let's go through and just address some of the yeah, buts. First of all, yeah, but I'm going to network at the show. Okay, that's the first thing. And what Dave's already said is you don't need a table or merchandise to do that. You can network great without buying a table. But I'm going to promote.
Hold on, can I pause you right there, though? Can I pause you 1 second? I just want to put this in everyone's mind because it is a shared problem in all of cartooning.
Yeah.
If you have not paid for a table and you're going to network and you're walking up to people who have paid for a table and are actively trying to sell, that is not the time to network. They don't want to talk to you. They want to sell to make up for the GD table that they just paid for.
So yes.
Don't think that that's a cool time to walk, because it drives me nuts that everybody thinks like, now's my time to talk to Dave Kellett. Dave Kellett's trying to pay off the $2,500 booth that he paid for at Comic-Con, you know, like go easy. Talk to me after the show. Anyway.
And that, by the way, that wouldn't be different if you did buy a table, because I've had the same thing where the guy at the table next to me isn't busy. I am. And now he's going to come and talk to me. It's like, I'm busy right now. I go back to your table until you're busy. Then I'll come and talk to you.
It's a little bit like, I don't know why I always quote Dostoevsky, but it's like the parable of the onion. It's like, just because you're drowning doesn't mean you have to drag me down with you. Go back to your boat. I don't want to talk right now. So keep going. Okay. So networking and a show.
Here's the next. But I'm going to promote my comic at the show. And you know what I'm going to say, Dave, if it isn't clickable, it isn't promotion. Besides, the attendees aren't there for the comics. They're there to see a star from a TV series that aired 20 years ago. They're not there for comics anymore. And I'm going to talk more about that in just a little bit of a moment. So I'm going to come back to that topic in a second. How about this? But I'm going to talk with publishers and potential collaborators at a show. You don't need a table for that either. And in fact, speaking about how I was desperate to do this show today, this weekend, Scott Kurtz tweets this, quote, "I have always found conventions to be a terrible place to do business. Everyone talks a big game and makes promises. Then everyone goes home and nothing happens every time in my experience." And I read that and I'm like, we got to do this show. This is something that's happening in the zeitgeist right now. It's not a great place to go and talk. You know, there's a lot that just doesn't happen as a result of all of this. And here's something that I really want to talk about. And this comes back to what comic conventions has become. Because I was listening to you say, Dave, I've got $20 of convention supplies that are paid for. And I've got 20 years of experience, and I honestly can hear somebody saying, but how do we get there if you're telling us not to go? How can this person listening at home build up 20 years of their experience if we're sitting here telling them not to go? Okay, which is a fair question, right?
It is a fair question, yeah.
Here's the answer, and this sounds terrible, but here's the fact of the matter. The cons themselves are different today than they were 20 years ago. And that's undeniable.
That is very true.
They used to be, and I know this makes me sound like an old man, but I'm not complaining. This is just pragmatism. The comic conventions used to be about comics back in the day. Okay. That's where people used to go to discover new comics, to buy comics, to celebrate comics. Today, it's more, and all you've got to do is walk into your nearest comic convention and prove it to yourself with your own eyes. Now it's about getting a celebrity autograph and cosplay and any number of other things, and they are not there to find your independent comics anymore, and that's okay. Things change, and it's okay that this has gone on, and now it's for somebody else. It's okay that it's not for you anymore, but you can't pretend that it is for you. The comic conventions that you want to go to haven't existed, and I'm going to say for probably 10 years now.
I'll be honest, we kind of came in at the tail end of what they once were. You know, the first years of when we were exhibiting was kind of the last hurrah for what comic shows used to be. I will say that there are a few shows in North America that are worth mentioning that are a very different timber than all the big wizard shows or the Comic Cons. And those are the SPXs in Maryland, like the Small Press Expo, TCAF in Toronto, Toronto Comics Arts Festival. Usually, if there's something called a Comics Art Festival, I think there's another one in the Midwest or in middle Canada. All of which is to say, those shows are not the big corporations. They're not the pop culture pushers. They're not a show where you can go. I always forget that bobbleheaded character. That what's that company that makes the bobbleheads out of Seattle? That when they're at a show, you know it's a very different show. Like that's a pop culture show. Yeah, Funko. There we go.
Funko.
I just remember when Funko and a video game company is at a show, it's a very different show than an SPX, which has somebody comicking about their feelings. You know, that's a very different show than someone wearing a cape and like everyone looking for an Iron Man sketch or getting a photo with Captain Picard. Go ahead.
Yeah. So now, listen, we did say that the first part of the show has been brought to you by our good friends at Wacom. I do need to tell you that we are now on the last part of the show, and it is brought to you by Wacom, and it's also brought to you by my wife, Mrs. Geiger, because without her, the next part of this show would not have happened.
Okay.
So she's listening to me talk to my intern, my former intern that I'm currently mentoring, and I'm walking her through basically a very much a more gently worded version of what you've heard so far today. Okay. But much more coming from like the favorite uncle. Okay. Very, very nice. But it was the same stuff. And she goes, she pulls me aside after listening to me on the phone. She says, "You don't understand one thing." And I go, "What don't I understand? Go ahead. Tell me what I don't understand." She says, "It's hot nerd summer. They've been holding back for a year and they want this. This is the exact same thing as talking sex to teenagers. Of course they're not ready. Of course they're getting into all kinds of things that they don't know what they're getting into. Of course, all of that is true. And on paper, you're absolutely right. There are just like talk a sex talk. There's all kinds of things that you don't understand as a teenager, but you're preaching abstinence and you should be telling them how to wear a condom
for Comic-Cons. Yeah.
Or how to at least have safer sex.
Yeah.
So without her, you'd never have this next part where we're going to talk about, I'm going to give you four strategies on how you can do a comic convention safely.
Okay.
All right.
By the way, this is where the Comic Lab Live Gab comes in so handy because KVH just typed in the forum, we should call this Comic Condoms.
Comic condoms. That's brilliant.
That is brilliant. That is genuinely brilliant. All right. So go ahead. What are the three things? This is, first of all, we should all thank Mrs. Geiger for this section. That's great.
Here's how you can have hot nerd summer and not get into a trouble that's going to be following you along for the next 18 years. First of all, as we mentioned, you can go as an attendee. You do not need to buy a booth. And as long as you maintain a certain amount of etiquette and protocol, like Dave said, you don't go up to somebody who's selling and start yammering it away. You can do all kinds of things, and you can bring work samples. You can even print up some of your own flyers or things that you're going to hand out and leave them with people that you want to leave them with, like editors and publishers and people you'd like to collaborate with. If you're not standing behind the table, you can go and get some informational panel discussions and learn more about comics. You can attend a portfolio review, even if you don't want to work with that publisher. You can attend a portfolio review just to get objective feedback on the work you're doing, right? You can do all kinds of things as an attendee without buying a booth. Okay, so that's one strategy. Here's another one. Let's say that you still feel that you need to have a booth, that comes with a certain amount of cachet. And I think that's in your head, but that's fine. You do you. You've got to have a booth. Now, if you're going to do this, I'm going to suggest that you don't sell anything. And think about what I'm saying here. If you get a booth.
All right. Well, this caught me off guard. Okay.
You can get a booth and just hand stuff out. Just promote. Right? If you get a booth and you don't sell, now you're not all that upset about A, printing up a bunch of merchandise that may or may not be unproven. You're not worried about flyers. You're not worried about signage. I've just taken three big expenses off. You're not worried about a card reader. You're not worried about sales tax. I just took off a whole bunch of those expenses. You can still print up some stuff to hand out. You can still have art there that you're showing, have a portfolio. But if you show up and you're just there to promote, you've taken a bunch of your costs off.
Well, okay, I'm going to chime in with a little bit of color on this one, because I feel like this is less than useless to have a booth that you're just promoting at. Okay. Because I say this as someone who spends, I don't know, $200-$300 at San Diego Comic-Con on flyers that I leave at the freebie table and that I have at my table and that I pass out. Yes, that is a great supplement to the show. It is not worth spending $1,000 for a table to hand out 3-cent flyers. That is not worth it. I'm just saying, with all the love in my heart, that is not worth it.
I'm not talking. You're right. At $1,000, no. But if you've got a couple $100 at an Artist Alley table at your local convention, that's a different thing.
I'm jumping back in again, though, because this one has me a little bit piss and vinegar.
Okay.
Because if someone sees that you are just handing out flyers, no one is walking up to your table. Here's what happened. People will go just out of arm's reach so that they don't have to interact with you. I know, I've been to enough shows where if you're not selling anything that catches their eye, that brings them to the table, they're not going to actively walk by you to get sold to with a flyer, right? That's like intentionally walking by someone who's going door to door selling carpet brushes. You're like, I'm avoiding that person. Nope, I'm not doing that. Like, I don't want to talk with them. So I'm just telling you, it's not going to work. It's not worth it. Brad, this is a good contrast for Brad's point, which is that you can save money by not selling. But I'm telling you as a friend, I do not feel like this is worthwhile. I feel like there are better ways to, I don't know, do that day than that way. But go ahead, keep going.
I'm not going to counterpoint and go back and forth. That's a fair, what you said is fair. For me, the only reason I added that, to be honest with you, is for the person who feels hell-bent that they got to have a table at the show. Right?
And can I chime in again?
I'm so sorry. This person just show up as an attendee, but if they got to have a table.
I don't know if suddenly I'm Brad Geigering this. I'm mad about this, because here's the problem. I just don't want any of us to feel like we have to play cartoonist. Like, I'm not a cartoonist unless I have a table. I'm not a cartoonist unless I go to conventions. Then I'm playing cartoonist. Like, losing money is not necessary to feel like a cartoonist. You're a cartoonist because you create comics. You share them with people. People read them. They pass them along. That makes you a cartoonist, not playing a cartoonist at a convention. I don't want people to spend money just to feel like they're playing cartoonists. You know what I mean? Like I don't know. That just gets me frustrated. I see what you're doing, and I fully respect it. You're trying to save them money by offering them less painful ways. But this feels like the ultimate in just having a table to have a table. And I but keep going. You're on the right point.
I agree with you at the heart. I especially the part about playing cartoonist. I totally agree with you. So I'm gonna come back strong with my third strategy. I promise you, you're gonna love this. Here's another thing that you can do that doesn't involve selling at a convention, that you can do and get just as much out of the convention. And that's this: go to the convention again as an attendee. And I want you to find somebody who is currently where you want to be in 5 or 10 years, somebody who is now where you want to be in 5 years, and offer to take them to dinner or at least lunch. Okay, you're going to pick up the tab, so plan accordingly. If they agree, arrange to meet them and spend your time picking their brains. Before you go, write down 10 or 20 questions so you don't freeze up and forget, and then ask them everything that you want to know about becoming the person that they are right now. Ask for feedback, ask for pitfalls to avoid, ask how you can walk that same road. For the cost of dinner, you could get a private one-on-one consulting session with a professional who has firsthand experience getting to where you're trying to go. Now, Dave, did I redeem myself with that one?
Well, yes. Except
yes, this is, and
I'm gonna yes and this. Yeah. Part of this is mirror marketing on my part, is that if someone came up to me and said, "Hey, Dave, can I take you to dinner?" Yeah. I'll tell you what would be in my heart is that when I go to a show in Seattle and I've flown in, and there are other friends from Canada or Europe that have flown into Emerald City Comic Con, I want to go to dinner with them. And I always feel bad because it's like, I don't have time. The time that I have, we've already established that I'm going to go to bed at 9 because I'm a dad and I want to sleep in a nice ice cold hotel room with the curtains drawn. So like, I only have a dinner basically, you know? And so I want to go see Jeff Jacks, who I only see once or twice a year or once every 3 or 4 years. I want to go hang out with David and Nikki Malky, or I want to go see Dylan McConnis and her wife, or I want to go, hang out with Erica Mohan or whoever it is that I'm going to see, who I don't get to see for, one or two years, especially now with COVID. So I never want people to feel bad, but I'm like, no, thank you. I do a podcast every week so that I can share what I know. Literally, my entire life is on display in terms of comics with that podcast. Listen to that. I don't have time to do one-on-ones. And I know that makes me sound like a grump, but I'm just being honest that that's a great idea. I think coffee is a better way to do it than a meal. Yep. It's like dating, where give that person an easier out than a full hour meal. Say like, can I buy you a coffee and take 5 minutes of your time to ask 6 questions? And then if you make it limited like that, I feel like someone is more willing to say yes, give them an opportunity to say yes.
Yeah, I have done this. This is something I actually did because I here's one thing. Exhibitors are always hungry, right? And we don't feel like we can leave our table because as soon as we leave a table, somebody comes up and wants to buy $300 of merchandise, or at least that's how it feels in our head.
That's the mental game. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I've done this before where I said, hey, listen, bring me lunch, right? And go to a restaurant or something, not something you made, but bring me lunch and I'll let you sit behind the booth. And we'll sit here while I'm talking and we'll chat for the next half hour where there's a lull. And if somebody comes, I'm going to ignore you. But, I've got to go get on my hind legs and talk. But if you want to sit here for a lunch break behind the table, I'll sit here and talk comics with you then. I've actually done that. And lunch was very enjoyable.
Yeah, I think that's a smart idea. Well, if you are done with your three lists of when you say, you got four. So whoop. Okay, go ahead. Let's get into four.
I've got one more, and this one I believe strongly. I think that perhaps you should be doing conventions. I just don't think you should be doing comic conventions because of everything that we just got done talking about. The last, I want you to think about which events you could go to where you are the only comic in the area. You're the only person selling comics. For example, I had this idea, for example, for me, and I keep teasing my wife, there's a bunch of adult entertainer expos. And I said, I'm going to get a table over there sometime. I know where I want to go.
Can I just say a convention where Sheldon would not sell well? I'm just going to say it right out loud.
You might be surprised. Yeah, but like we had in the Comic Lab Discord, we've got somebody who does a delightful comic, charming as can be, with little llamas or alpacas, right? Now, if this person found a knitting convention where it's all about those textiles and stuff that llamas are used for. And now they've got a llama comic there. I would take a chance on that. I would take a chance on any convention where it's got nothing to do with comics, that when I set up my table, I'm unique and I'm the only person selling comics, but it's related to what's going on the show floor.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think had Kate Beaton, when she was focusing on history comics, had she done a history convention of historians, you know, that kind of thing. God knows what convention that would be. Why would that exist? But what I'm getting at is I take your point that the field where you're the only cartoonist, but the field is owned by you in terms of cartooning, that's a great possibility. Like, for example, I never did it, but there were a couple of pug shows in Los Angeles where I was like, I would clean up there. I would clean up at a pug show. Yeah. Selling my pugs book. And I, for whatever reason, I never did it. I think it just caught me at the wrong time in my life. But you're right. There is wisdom in that. In being the only show in town in terms of comics at a topic specific show. That's an interesting idea. So let me jump in on when I think people should do a show. And like Brad, you're going to do it earlier than you should. I already know this because I was that cartoonist. So this is older me saying, I know you're not going to listen to me, but you're going to do a show earlier than you should. And that's okay. It's not the end of the world. It's fun to do a show. I understand you. I know why you want to do a show this year, even though you should wait three more years to do your first Comic-Con or even your second Comic-Con. So I get it. I understand it. But here's what I think is the ideal to do a show. You've kickstarted your first book. The print run is paid for. You have anywhere from 200 to 1,000 extra copies left over, right? But they're all paid for. They're paid for by that Comic-Con. You have two or three other bits of merch that are on your online store that for the most part, they're already paid for. They're proven. They sell well at shows or sell well online, and you're pretty sure that they would sell well at a show. You've got an established online audience that when you tweet, hey, I'm going to be at Midwest Agoraphobe Con. Why did I call it that? Midwest Des Moines Con, June 4th through 9th. When you tweet that or in Instagram that or when you put it on your site, there's a few thousand to 10,000 of people that'll be like, oh, wow, Brad's going to Midwest Des Moines Con. That's fantastic. I'm going to go. Like, you're directing them to the show, not like you're hoping to meet people there. So that's the thing. And I would say that my gut would tell me somewhere between year four and year seven of your online comic is a not bad time to think about going to a show. So you already have a book. You've got some small bits of merch. You've got a built up audience that's of size. And to you, it's whatever matters to you, what size is. And then you're about 4 to 7 years into your comic online. Brad, what do you think about that as a broad idea?
I love that idea. I love that idea 110%.
And then I would maybe advise an artist alley table if you have been to that show as an attendee. By the way, that's a great idea too. If you're going to go for a first time, don't let the first time that you walk in the doors of that convention be when you've paid for a $1,000 booth.
Yes.
Go the year before as just an attendee. Do a walk around. See what the good locations are. See what the types of booth are. Oh, they have Artist Alley, but they also have small press, but they also have booths. Which one applies to you and which location do you like? And then you can plan what works best for that space. So I think you don't necessarily have to go with the big booth, especially if you only have one book and two bits of merch aside from the book. Get an Artist Alley table or a small press table and I think that's when I would advise is the best first time to go to the show.
Well, listen, on that positive note, after starting very negatively and then ending with some usable safe strategies, I think it's time for me to say you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my friend Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my friend Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the sponsors of today's show are friends over at Wacom at WACOM.com, the makers of the new Wacom One, which both Brad and I have in our studios. And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode.
And Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that like Dave Kellett at his first Comic-Con after COVID. Don't touch me! Don't touch me! Don't touch me! Don't touch me! Don't shake my hand! Don't shake my hand! Patreon.com/comiclab.
So I'm at a sporting event with my older son, and one of the other dads is there. And I hadn't seen him since pre-COVID. This is the first time he was coming out. So I'm a handshaker. I shake hands. I don't even think about it. I see somebody and I know them, I shake their hands, or I'm meeting them, I shake their hands. He's a fist bump guy. So he put out his fist and I shook it.
That is the worst when that happens, when you palm a fist. You're like, oh, yes, this is uncomfortable. Yes. Yeah. Because I'll tell you why. It feels oddly more intimate to palm a fist than it is to palm a palm. You're like, what's happening? This is a weird, like, now I feel like we're married in Georgia. I don't know what's going on here.
After that, I had to really avoid eye contact.
You walk away quickly, walk away quickly.
I had to do the walk of shame back to my car.